Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. This show is pretty special to me. We had, as you know, great guests on all of our episodes, but this particular show is going to bring on some folks from an organization that we've really had a strong relationship for over 15 years. And in the smart building journey, when we first started out, the ideas were big and bold, and it was the early adopters and the innovators who took charge, and they were typically smaller firms who are, you know, more agile and able to take risks, bigger risks. And then one day along comes GSA Public Building Services, the organization responsible for the real estate in the federal government. And a guy by the name of Larry Melton walked into our conference and said, I want to learn about the smart building stuff. And the rest is history. And so today's two guests are going to continue that story and give you an idea of how this giant real estate organization is not just big, but they are agile and they are bold and they take risks like we've never seen. So today's guest is going to be Chip Pierpoint, GSA Director of Innovation, Technology and Performance, and Anna Rawson, GSA Smart Building Program Manager. Boy, I'll tell you this, I am really, really proud and grateful to have you on the show today. You know, as you heard me say, our journey started, you know, 15 plus years ago with you folks. And the best part about it is the journey didn't stop. The journey wasn't sidetracked. The journey didn't go off a cliff. The journey continues. So Chip, we've been together a long time, you know, as peers in this battle. Can you give us a little of your background, a little history, and then we're going to jump down and do the same and then get right into the conversation.
No, Jim, I'd be more than happy to. And I think, you know, your modesty is probably part of it. But I think the story really needs to go back to about 2008, as you mentioned. And Larry came calling. And it was your organization that, you know, took him in, got him out to RealCom, you know, gave him that immersive experience. And then ultimately, you know, kind of forged a collaboration with Intelligent Buildings, who's been our trusted consultant, you know, through this journey. So in 2008, you know, that germ, you know, that seed was planted, ultimately that, ended in an award in 2012. Finally, we got a solicitation on the street. 2013, our FDD went live, with 54 buildings. We were able to exercise an option the following year, adding an additional 26 buildings. And as you said, we've just continued each year, you know, some more buildings, some less buildings, but ultimately we stand now at 110 buildings, more than 65 million square feet, you know, on our platform. And we've seen just tremendous benefits in utilizing the system, both in efficiency and economy, you know, to our portfolio. For those of you that aren't familiar, just to give you a realm, you know, we've got approximately 1,500 buildings, and we're in the 370, 380 million square feet. When we started with the FDD, with GSA Link, which is our FDD I'm talking of, we had targeted what we call the Cover 200. So we targeted the 200 facilities that equate to about 75% of our energy use. So we were aligned perfectly to where we weren't looking at, you know, a wide, you know, disbursement of this program. We actually had a fairly small number of buildings with a very large square footage. So we felt like we were really gonna be able to get a foothold and kind of, you know, move the needle. So that's where we are.
So Anna, where did you join this journey?
So interestingly enough, I joined it around the same time, but from a different perspective. So I've been with Region 4 for a number of years. I've been with GSA almost 20 years. And I started first as the regional energy coordinator. I was working, putting on automation systems onto the GSA network. It was the early systems that were getting integrated onto a secure network. And that progressed into working with smart buildings. It was brand new to GSA at the time. I was a regional representative from that
viewpoint. What year was that?
That was probably around 2009, 2010, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And the timeline's a little bit fuzzier on my end, but... I did participate as the regional representative on the source selection, the original source selection for GSA Link. And then my career took a few different turns in that I went to work as the regional client executive for the judiciary for about 3 years, which gave me great insight into the client perspective because these buildings are meant to serve people, right? And so that was a really great opportunity that I had prior to coming back to my roots and smart buildings and facility management and the technical side, which I really enjoy.
Well, we were talking earlier, where were you when? And Chip said, you know, the journey started in 08, the proposal finally came out in 2012. I remember, and I see a message just came in from Larry. Larry, I'm going to give you a shout out. I was on my bicycle, and Larry called me and said, the bid's going out. And I will never forget that day because it was basically, we moved it from early adopter and innovator more into mainstream. GSA PBS got in a big way, as did Microsoft. So we had a big government, building owner operator. We had our big corporate. And really, both of you, those organizations came in at the right time and brought the muscle of a major organization. Larry, I just want to say thank you for having your insight. You came in, didn't know what you were, really what you were doing at that point. You didn't have a lot of experience with technology, but you opened your heart, you opened your mind. Yeah, and you learned, and I think as a result, set the foundation for this great work that these two continue. So thank Larry for that. As I was talking about him, I saw his name pop up, so it's pretty fun. Let's go to, to the question of change, Chip. I mean, I remember early days, you had to stop the battleship because it was going in a certain direction, the way you purchased equipment, and now you needed it to be open and integrated, interoperable. The government has a reputation of being big, bureaucratic, clunky, and yet you were all able to move at an incredible pace and make changes better than some smaller private organizations. What's the secret?
Well, I think one of the key factors where we've gained our success has been our partnership. True partnership and collaboration with our IT component within GSA. So our PBITS is what they're called. Phil Klokas, who runs that organization, as well as Sandy Shadshur, who works directly with Anna and I on a daily basis. Having that close collaboration in making sure that the devices that we buy, both the hardware and software, are scanned, remediated, ensuring that every step we take when we put out an acquisition, we know that we're going to end up being able to become FedRAMP compliant, be able to go either on-prem or to the cloud. So you can't really take a step and be innovative moving forward unless you have your IT and your cybersecurity in line. So I would think the number one thing we've done is made sure we have that collaboration. The second piece, as I've said in multiple RealComs, is having your stakeholders. So whether you're a private industry and you're looking at your board, or whether you're an individual, or whether you're the government, you have to have your stakeholders on board. So your fiscal, your CFOs, your investors, your IT. If you're all working collaboratively and everybody's on the same page and you learn how to speak each other's language, you can really make things happen fairly quickly. So I to answer your question, I think getting an understanding of what the requirements were. And again, in the federal government, our cyber requirements are extremely stringent compared to what you'd think in private industry. But I tell people all the time in dealing with RealCom and other events, if the federal government can do it, there's no excuse that private industry or corporations can't do it. It's just a matter of making sure that before you take that step and you double down and continue to double down, that you're trying to as best as you can to ensure that you're keeping up with what's going. And Jim, I'll throw it back at you. I think the consortium and some of the things that you're doing with regard to the CIO and how that interrelates with real estate and with building operations continues to be one of the focuses in success in this particular area.
Yeah, and let's pause for a minute because we go through these quick conversations and points are missed. You mentioned Phil Klokas, right, who has been an absolute integral part of this discussion. But what it really talks about is the integration of facilities and IT, right? Where the people that understand the equipment and the technical nature of the systems, and then those IT folks who are going to create the umbrella and are going to integrate all this technology in a safe and secure way. Anna, I see you nodding. I mean, tell me some of the challenges or better yet, the successes you've had in respect to that integration.
I mean, that relationship is key. I mean, their success is our success. Their headaches are our headaches, right? So any project that we do, they're completely at the hip with us in planning for. And that's allowed us to take our FDD or GSA Link platform and really apply additional use cases that we didn't anticipate before, but because we're able to, you know, look at the different needs within the portfolio, really brainstorm with them what makes sense based on existing equipment and what additional equipment's needed, and then identify any challenges we may need in the application to the, you know, the network where necessary, we can, those gaps are bridged, you know, and that's been the case for a number of different new applications that we have with GSA Link, which we can get to.
It's so easy to sit here and just say, oh yeah, you've got a great relationship, IT and facilities is working, but it is 2021. And if your journey started in 2008, I believe, if I remember correctly, the understanding of IT and facilities integration was understood and adopted very quickly, right?
Yeah, the early communications, I think even under Larry, right? It was buildings, technology, and people. That was kind of the message, the three components. Mm-hmm.
So here's the million-dollar question. We are now in 2021, a good number of years later, and yet many organizations, big organizations, have not come to the realization that you did, let's say, in the 2008 to 2010 timeframe. What's holding organizations back from realizing what they need to do to take their buildings to the next level?
Well, you know, I think it's a breaking apart of what facilities you're going to focus on. You know, GSA has such a large array of different types of buildings. You know, we have historic buildings, we have brand new buildings, and we have everything in between, from size and tiny, tiny facilities all the way to up towards the 3 million square feet facilities. And not all the systems are the same. So really prioritizing the systems that, you know, are new or going to be renovated, really putting emphasis on those systems to be delivered in a way that is consistent and able to integrate in a way that we need to going forward that can be interoperable with newer systems, and, you know, trying to stick to open systems that can be converged onto our network in a secure way. And then you build up, those older systems still need to be renovated and updated in the future as well. But you have to start with a focus. And I think
my question really had to do less with the technology, more with the human organizational side. You know, what does it get to take an IT person to sit down with a facilities folk or vice versa and realize that they need to be on the same team?
This is where the industry is going, right? If you're going to put a requirement in your scope of work and your requirements that to integrate to a network in order to have remote access, those stakeholders need to be at the table. And so having that conversation that you can't just like put something in without the discussion and without working through the requirements and including the proper policies, and then it's just not going to happen. So I think the alignment and the success that GSA has had has really been a byproduct of alignment from the top down and bottom up too. I mean, we are very partnered at the regional level, you know, national level, and it's just been one that we continue to work on. Obviously, every individual plays a part in this. Like, communication happens from person to person, right?
Exactly.
But as an organization, I feel that we do link in an appropriate way and a regular way. And that's really kind of leading by example with our group, being that we work so closely with GSA IT.
And Jim, yeah, let me just chime in. I think another way to look at it is it's got to be top down. Right? How do you get the IT and the OFM people to talk to each other? Because they're completely different languages. Yes. IT is a different language than facilities. Never will those languages, you know, mix. They just won't. It just isn't going to happen. So you have to recognize, you know, what each person and what each organization brings, but it has to be top down. It has to be stakeholder wide buy-in. And one of the things that you mentioned early on is we started back in 08. We got it out on the street in 12. We're now in 21. And the reason we've been able to do that is we've had years where we've added two or three buildings. We've had years where we've added 10 buildings. We've had everything in between. Obviously, that ties into different administrations. It ties into congressional funding, you know, different focuses, you know, at the different, you know, presidential, priorities, if you will. Right. But through it all, we've been able to demonstrate that making decisions and operating your buildings based on data and leveraging technology to minimize your labor costs ultimately results in saving money and having a better bottom line. So for private industry, that's a done deal. For us, it saves taxpayers' dollars. So what I would say is that the top down you know, buy-in and the driving of the resultant savings and the efficiencies, whether that's actually efficiencies in your O&M costs or whether that's efficiencies in reducing energy that you know, applies directly to dollars saved, that's where it comes in. And I think over time, you learn, right? Anna and I can tell you that we understand the key pain points for IT. You know, having a ransomware, having Phil or one of his team going to the Hill and explaining why one of our federal facilities was hacked. We have to appreciate where they're coming from. At the same time, if they want to put in some type of cyber protection that really is of a minimal risk operationally, but it's going to greatly impact the mission of our building occupants, we can't have that. And we've come up with multiple different matrices where we understand the risk versus the impact. And that's why I think we're in a very mature place right now.
You are.
Because of all this time.
Right.
The next thing I'll say to you, back to your original question, is you focus at RealCom, and as do other consultants, you just have to take that first step. You have to pick that one building, or you have to pick that building type. You have to get with somebody that knows what they're doing. You get a little education. You make an investment into that FDD. You see what it does. And every single time it has proved to be successful, you know, if you start out right with a good building, a good case, a good piece of software, a good consultant, you'll get there from here. And then it just expands from there.
Right. And you know, listening to you talk, I think what we're going to do is we're going to bring you back if you're open to doing that. We're going to bring Phil Klokas into the conversation, and I think we could spend an episode on just the organizational aspects, the integration of IT and facilities from the very point, the struggles you experienced, when you made your breakthroughs, and then now as a mature organization, the integration's complete or ongoing, what advice you would give. So I think we're going to have the two of you plus Phil back if you're open to that. We're going to take a brief commercial break, and we'll be back, and I'm going to ask you about what's next for GSA PBS. All right, now back to our conversation. So before we go on to what's next, I want to take a question from one of the audience members. It's a good one, too, because a lot of it's cultural. Stephen Crow asks, you know, do IT folks and other people higher up in the organization have a lower opinion of the on-site facilities person as far as their capabilities, and that might be one of the things that's holding things up. How did your on-site facilities people and some of the higher up in the organization who may have a little bit stronger IT technology background, how did they mesh?
You know, I think the focus is really in viewing that they're the people, like boots on the ground, people in the building, right? And so it's a partnership with them as well. I mean, our core focus of our program is to enable them to make better decisions locally. Like it takes a lot of work to analyze a building automation system and all the points that exist within it and how it's operating. And so to the extent that this data can be analyzed in an efficient and consistent way, that's the message that we are working with them on, is to use these as tools that empower them to do their job more effectively. And so, you know, the relationship between like national and some of your national representatives, some of your regional smart buildings representatives, and then the facility managers, and then in turn the mechanics, we are all working towards the same goal. And it's, so the message is that they need us and we need them. And so to that end, you know, these tools, we are very open to feedback and to discussions to see how we can further refine, because this isn't the end, you know, it's really just the beginning.
It's a journey.
Right, exactly. And to that end, we want the technology to also layer upon itself, and that we're not locked into any particular, you know, context, because the world's continuing to change.
Yeah, I always get asked the question, who's going to win, facilities or IT? And I say both. I said each needs each other desperately. The boots on the ground understand that building, that technology in the building like no one. IT understands networks and all the bigger enterprise issues, but neither can do it on their own. And the faster you realize it's a team, the better you're going to get to that step that Chip said, take your first building and run, you know. All right, so we only have a few minutes left. I'm going to start with Chip. What's next for GSA PBS? What are you looking at in the future? Are we going to have drones delivering things on top of buildings and autonomous cars pulling into parking lots? What's next?
I would love to say that's what's next. But I think everybody can recognize that the very first thing for us is reoccupation of buildings, you know,
yes.
being responsive to the COVID pandemic. To that end, we're really working very diligently hard. Anna is leading the national initiative for censoring. So we absolutely have not leveraged censoring, you know, across our portfolio the way we probably would have or could have. But the cost of censoring has gone down so rapidly, and the market has become very wide in opportunity. So we have a national initiative focused this year in censoring. That's going to help us not only with the occupancy and trying to right size our portfolio, and also, you know, right size each individual building, assist all of our agencies to identify how many of their employees are actually coming back to the facilities, and you know, just looking at that hybrid work environment. So, right. So the censoring is going to help us there. Of course, you know, we would never miss the opportunity to incorporate into censoring our IEQ, IAQ. You know, we will always fight to try to get some handle on that productivity aspect. You know, that's where the money is. So I would say censoring is our near term, you know, primarily driven by COVID, not only for the occupancy piece, but because of the comfort or the peace of mind for employees, really knowing what's going on with regard to their ventilation and filtration, you know, as people are concerned. So that would be first and foremost. I think, secondly, we're really looking to leverage technology in our FDD on the M&V for our performance contracts. We have energy savings performance contracts. You know, that's something that's coming out potentially from the administration trying to leverage these contracts. It's very important that we are able to use technology to M&V those to ensure the taxpayers are getting what we expect from these ESCOs. I would say those were the two primary. But, you know, Anna, I'll let you share.
Yeah, before we go to Anna, I'm going to just do a shout out to Frank Santella, also watching today. Frank was another one of those people who held this entire program on his shoulders, one of the people in early days. Without Frank, I'm not sure we'd be here. So, Frank, thank you for all of your efforts and early on. And it is truly recognized what an important role you played to allow, you know, Chip and others to continue this great work. So thanks for doing what you did, and thanks for being on the show today. So, Anna, we only got a couple minutes. I'm going to push you to go further than just reoccupation. What's the crazy ideas that you're thinking about? I mean, you know, 3-5 years out, is there anything that could pique our viewers' interest on what you might be thinking about down the road?
Well, I think we really need to explore machine learning and artificial intelligence a little further. And I think that's going to be a combination of looking at the technology itself and then taking a deep look at our internal processes and policies within how we run. You know, those have to really work in tandem. We really are advocates of looking for what the need is and what the problem is to solve before just applying the technology. And I really think that the smart sensors in particular is going to give us another level of data that we haven't had previously at a granularity that just hasn't been available to us that will allow us to have even more effectiveness in how we operate our buildings based on making informed decisions. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in that space.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. And like I said, this is not work for me. This is enjoyment to just rekindle old conversations, to watch your journey. But I will end from my perspective on saying that for any organization out there that wonders if smart, connected, intelligent, high-performance buildings are the way of the future, look no further than GSA PBS. They've been at it at scale more longer than anybody. These two folks today demonstrate it's not going anywhere. In fact, it's going to continue on into the future, and it's now the new normal. And so I just want to say thank you to both of you for your hard work, not just, you know, in the last year or two, but for the last 15, 20. Without people like you and Larry and Frank and many others, you wouldn't be here to tell these stories today. And I just want to say thank you for helping us in this journey. So,
and Jim, I just, again, want to thank you for giving us the forum and circling back and continue to be a partner, you know, with both private and public. And your organization obviously was what got us started on the journey, and you continue to circle back and try to share that those experiences across all, you know, different aspects of the real estate and facilities environment.
Well, thank you so much for that. I take that very seriously, but we're going to be back in person in November. We're going to go to Scottsdale. We got the place lined up. It's going to be a spectacular reuniting of physical bodies in a building, and we got some surprises on the virtual hybrid as well. So hopefully you guys are going to be part of that, as you always have been, and we continue the journey. So
thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. You can tell how much fun that was. That's just, you know, looking at your career, looking at the things you've done, and to see stories like that emerge from this wonderful community is really a good feeling. So with that, I'm going to bring on Howard Berger, who's going to bring us up to speed on what the heck is going on with news this week. Howard, that felt like a homecoming. And you were there at the very beginning. You and Larry, you took him under your wing and walked around that exhibit floor. So you've got your fingerprints all over this.
This is great to see. Thanks, Jim. And thanks, Anna and Chip. What a great conversation. And it's just been an honor to be able to follow the story, you know, throughout the decades. So I'll get right into it. So every week we highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing. It's released Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. And our lead article this week is around incentivizing investments in cybersecurity for buildings. And it's written by Lucian Niemeyer. Now, Lucian's an Air Force vet, former U.S. Senate staff member, and the former Assistant Secretary of Defense. He's now CEO for BCS, which is Building Cybersecurity, and is raising public awareness of the risk of cyber attacks, especially those that target smart building technologies. They're developing frameworks to accelerate adoption of cyber best practices. And they're working closely with our RECC, our Real Estate Cybersecurity Consortium Group. So a Colonial Pipeline hack by DarkSide, it really exposed how vulnerable the world, especially the US, has become with respect to the massive and expanding threat surface that's available to cyber criminals and terrorists. Any device now can be hacked by even relatively unsophisticated cyber criminals. And this poses massive threats to hospitals, schools, transportation, dams, nuclear power plants, factories, the grid, every system, building, and structure that's connected to a network. It's getting so bad that insurance companies are having a hard time rationalizing risk management programs for building owners. So I just wanted to thank Lucian for this call to action for us to develop and implement a cohesive national framework for cyber. And RealCom and the RECC definitely support the work of BCS. Next, I just want to shout out to this week's technology partner, Avuity. They focus on applying their hardware, software, and mobile app to helping owners and occupiers better understand how their real estate is being utilized. So pandemic drew a lot of attention to health and well-being, both physical and mental, in our corporate space requirements. And over the past year, we've seen a bunch of technologies that capture data, measure, monitor a variety of things, from biometrics to temperature to social distancing to indoor traffic patterns. Many of them use AI. So now algorithm integrity and data privacy are even more important than ever. Now add to that worker preferences changing, hybrid work models continuing to develop. Bottom line, I think it's going to be touch and go for corporate workplace strategists for a little while, and they're going to need to be flexible and resilient as we work out the details over the next 12 months. And the messages of Avuity is there to help. Also in the news, last story, access control building software provider Latch officially went public on Monday as it completed its merger with Tishman Speyer Properties' own SPAC, TS Innovation Acquisitions Corp. They were founded in 2014. Latch is an enterprise SaaS provider to buildings and residents, and they claim to have booked over 300,000 units in more than 35 states, with 1 in 10 new multifamily apartments in the U.S. Are built with Latch, post 2019. Companies raised $327 million to date from investors, including Camber Creek, BlackRock Private Equity Partner, and others. Now, what's notable, Latch recently announced they're going to expand into the office space, natural extension to their current business, although in certain ways it's a completely different market. But Casey Berman from Camber Creek commented that he thinks it should be relatively simple to manage the transition, as is in his view, multifamily properties are more complex to manage. Not sure about that, but... So unfortunately, I am out of time. That's it for me today, but there's a lot more in our weekly briefing. Please check it out, and I'll see you guys all next week.
Howard, as always, you take a million articles, narrow it down to the top three, and I would just encourage viewers to read that weekly news brief, and if they agree or disagree with some of the news, let us know. Great job. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, so before I talk about next week's show, we're going to hear from our final sponsor, and I will be right back. All right. Thank you to Density. So some thank yous. Just want to say a big thank you to Chip and Anna for a great conversation today. And again, not to forget Larry, Melton, or Frank, or all the other people from GSA who've been on this journey for the last 15 plus years. Great conversation, one that is not stopping, and we will be bringing back time and time again. So next week, we're going to dig into one of those organizations who has been a leader of innovation globally for many years, MIT. We've had various relationships with MIT over the years, from their innovation groups to their real estate groups. And next week, we are very fortunate to have James Scott, MIT Innovator in Residence. And we're going to see what MIT is up to and what that might mean for the commercial and corporate real estate industry. So with that, I say thank you very much. Have a great week, and we will see you next Friday.